The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas, for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hi, it's Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is the art of being well. What's up and welcome to the art of being well. I am a leading functional medicine doctor. I get to consult people around the world via webcam, and I'm a New York Times bestselling author. If you want to learn more about my clinical work, our telehealth center, we have brand new telehealth patient options now open for you all, and lots of free resources, like a ton of free resources for you to reclaim your health, optimize your health. You can learn about it all at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And listeners, we're giving away free healthy stuff every single episode, no matter when you listen to this one. We're giving away free signed books. We're giving away free supplement protocol stacks that we have at drwillcole.com. What else are we giving away? Free functional medicine telehealth consults if you want one. So you get to pick what you want, either getting scheduled for a telehealth consult or picking a supplement protocol or free signed book. All you have to do for a chance to win is head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Art of Being Well there. Tell us what you love about the show. You can leave your Instagram handle in the Apple Podcast review or take a screenshot of your review and message me on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole. And then every single month, my team and I will be going through the messages on Instagram as well as the Apple Podcast reviews themselves and randomly picking winners every single month. And then I'll reach out to you. You can tell me which one you want. All right, let's get to today's guest. His name is Zach Abbott. Zach holds a PhD in microbiology and immunology from the University of Michigan and is the inventor of a proprietary technology, which you're going to learn about today when it comes to alcohol, drinking alcohol, that kind of alcohol, and gut health, microbiome health. Prior to starting his company, ZBiotics, Zach worked in clinical trial design as well as researching HIV vaccines and pursuing novel antibiotics in both academia and industry. Zach founded ZBiotics in 2016 based on a novel idea. What if they could use genetic engineering to develop new probiotics, ones with specific, unique abilities to improve our daily lives? Let's get right to it. This is Zach Abbott's Art of Being Well. Zach, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Let's start with how you got into the space, because you do such amazing work, such innovative stuff. And I love the space of within science. What was your personal journey like?
Yeah, it was kind of a long journey. I certainly didn't, this endpoint wasn't where I was kind of headed from the beginning. It just kind of happened to be the place I found. But, you know, I was always really interested in science, but I didn't really know how to leverage that or how I really wanted to use that in my life. I didn't grow up in a family of scientists, so I didn't really even know that as a career path per se. And so it was a bit of a circuitous journey, even just to kind of discover that that's what I wanted to do with my life. But I took some time after college, worked several jobs, and then did a PhD in microbiology. I knew I was passionate about the microbe-host interaction. I think at that time in my life, I was really more interested in pathogens and, you know, bacteria or viruses that cause disease. And I was particularly interested in HIV. But then as I got into my PhD and I was working with bacteria, I learned like all, really, it's a very small percentage of the bacteria that create a problem. The vast majority are neutral and or like symbiotic or beneficial to all life on the planet, including humans. And that really started to excite me as I learned more about that. And there was a lot of things kind of coming up around the microbiome and probiotics, and people were getting more interested in that. And as I learned more, I saw that there was really a lot of really cool opportunities to leverage good bacteria to improve human health. And so kind of from there, I dove into what eventually becomes ZBiotics, the project that becomes ZBiotics.
Yeah. In your years of being passionate about microbiome science and bacterial science. You have a lot of nutrition nerds, science nerds that listen to the podcast. What's been the most surprising thing that you've found in, I guess, the progress of microbiome science, like something that we know now that we didn't know not too many years ago?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just like really the impact of the microbiome, I think, you know, one of the early facts that I think, you know, is offsided now, so it's not surprising to folks in, you know, in this space, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners, but, you know, I think for me, one of the big hooks early on was like this idea of like how many bacterial cells we have in our body, right? So the microbiome, I mean, estimates vary, but, you know, roughly speaking, we're talking about like about 30 trillion bacterial cells, which is roughly equivalent to the number of human cells that we have in our body as well. And I think one of the things that was really interesting to me and what sparked inspiration for ZBiotics was that even though, you know, it's surprising in its own right that those cell numbers are the same, but I think what's even maybe more exciting and what I think a lot of the field has come to appreciate is that while all of your human cells express the same set of DNA, you know, there's roughly 20,000 protein encoding genes in the human genome. There, you know, each bacterial cell has a different set of genes because they're all different. And so, you know, there's around 3 million bacterial protein encoding genes. And so that's 100-150-fold more times more, right, genes and therefore functions that the bacteria are performing inside your body. And so I think one of the things that we've really come to appreciate as a field is that the whole human body is really just kind of like an ecosystem for microbes to kind of perform the function they perform. And a lot of the things that we think of as human are really like microbially dictated or evolved to kind of work with microbes. And so, you know, a lot of things have come out about the gut-brain axis and now the gut-skin axis. But as we realize more and more, it's really like you could really cause an axis between the gut microbiome or really like just your whole microbiome, you know, your skin microbiome, the vaginal microbiome, the mouth microbiome. These are all connected to like your liver, your kidneys, your nerves, your immune system, like your emotions, like all these things are connected. And so I think that when we discovered for a while, it was like, these bacteria in here and they're probably net neutral or not doing much. And then it was like, oh no, we're appreciating that they actually do a lot of functions for us. And then it started to kind of like almost, I feel like we realized the other way around in a lot of ways, or that it's at least a two-way street that we do a lot of functions for them. And in a lot of ways, like we've evolved to be a really great kind of like carrying vessel for all these microbes and stuff. So I think that's been really, really cool to see. And so when we think of ourselves and our humanity, it's a lot of times it's a really like you kind of can't separate out like the microbial component.
When I think of this sort of evolutionary relationship between us and the, you know, microbiome, the capital M, right, the global microbiome, I think, is it symbiotic or do we need it more than it needs us? Or what's your thought there?
Yeah, I mean, tough to say. I mean, so we know that, like, for instance, like you can make mice that are germ-free, that have no microbiome. And so they still survive. So technically, we don't technically need them, but we do know that that mouse is much worse off than its genetically identical counterpart that has a microbiome. So the mice without a microbiome are dumber. They're more prone to like infection and they have an underdeveloped immune system. They can't gain weight very well. So we know that it is really vital, right? And yeah, right. And we are just one of many vessels and surfaces on which microbes can exist. So in a lot of ways, I think the dependency is far more us to them than them to us in a lot of ways, which is fascinating.
It is fascinating. And then you think of this co-evolution in a way, and like you mentioned, that's exactly how I always thought of it, is they used us, I'm using the pronoun they, but the microbiome uses us to get around the world, like transportation, right?
Exactly. Transportation, access to sort of like nutrients and assets that they need, right? And so like, I think one of the really interesting studies that I think this, I heard this at a lunchtime seminar once in grad school, and I think this more than anything got me so excited about the microbiome and its potential and really got me thinking existentially about what it is to be human. They showed that, so if they took, we're talking about those germ-free mice, those mice without a microbiome, if they then took the microbiome from a lean mouse and implanted it into that microbiome-free mouse or the microbiome from an obese mouse into another kind of germ-free mouse, and they looked at their behavior after. So nothing about the mouse changed, nothing about its genetics changed, anything. All it changed was the bacteria living in its gut. And the mouse that got the obese microbiome started eating more. And then it started gaining weight and becoming obese. So it's the mouse's decision to eat food was 100% predicated by the microbes in its gut. And so like the microbe was basically telling, like pulling the strings, right? In that gut-brain axis, pulling the strings of the mouse's brain to say like, eat more food, feed us more. And the mouse complied, right? And so when I think about like when I go to a restaurant and I know that I should order a salad, but then I end up ordering the burger when, you know, the waiter comes to take my order. It's like, who made that decision? Did I make that decision? Or did the microbiome tell me to because it wanted the fat or whatever it was, you know? So I think that like that to me was really exciting that that these microbes really are like, you know, there is a really deep relationship beyond like, you know, necessarily not always beyond our control.
Yeah. I've seen studies like that with the mice and the microbe germ-free out of the Weizmann Institute in Israel. They do a lot of interesting stuff out of that. And I think of, for all the 90s kids that listen to the podcast and 80s kids, I think of the villain on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles of Krang, where Krang, the brain that is living inside this robot. We're the robot.
That is so good because it's like in his belly too, right?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Oh my gosh, amazing. Totally. Yeah, I think, you know, another thing I found interesting along that same storyline was like the way that the microbes communicate with us is actually like our brain, the neurotransmitters, like the signals that go from our brain to pass between brain cells to kind of basically the language our brain speaks, like the brain cells speak, is actually taken from bacteria, right? Like, so those neurotransmitter pathways, the genetics that to manufacture those neurotransmitters are, those are actually, you know, many of them are bacterial derived. And then we just took them wholesale into our cells. So we are speaking the same chemical language as bacteria. And so they're able to directly communicate with us via the language of our own brain. So it's not surprising that they're able to kind of like make decisions for us because they can speak our brain's language.
Yeah, well said. And there's that's so intimately connected, right, to the vagus nerve, right? People hear of vagal nerve more and more today in conversations around nervous system regulation and the epidemic of mental health issues. And maybe you can talk about that. And also the mitochondria, the evolution of the mitochondria coming from bacteria is, this is all wonderfully, beautifully interconnected.
Totally. Yeah. So yeah, with vagus nerve, right? Like there's just like just super highway, right? Like I say, like, and it makes sense, right? That like, if you think of ourselves fundamentally, like at the most basic level of biology, where our goal is to keep ourselves alive and keep ourselves alive. And we need fuel every single day to do that. And so it makes sense that like the tube at which, from which we acquire nutrients and food is like direct, has a direct line of communication to the brain. And that's an inner very like high velocity kind of two-way street communication. So our gut is telling our brain to make decisions and our brain is telling our gut to do things based on the information it's received from the rest of our body. So the fact that this like superhighway is that the microbiome has a say, has an access to that superhighway, really means that like it's another party making decisions for us. So it's not just our cells kind of sending signals, it's those cells. And so that is kind of the existence of the gut-brain axis. But as I say, we've learned that there are many other axes that all connect to the gut. And at the end of the day, again, everybody's relying on the fuel. And so it makes sense that like this is the core. And you mentioned the mitochondria. I mean, it's all about energy, right? Like, so food is energy. And then the mitochondria basically turns nutrients into ATP, which is like the currency, the energy currency of all cells. And so we basically like, eukaryotic cells, the cells that make up humans and plants and everything else. And they engulfed a bacteria that was capable of making this energy, right? And so we basically stole energy production from bacteria as well. And so, it's a really, truly like a symbiotic relationship. You know, they get a lot of benefits from that environment as well. But
Yeah. So every cell of our body has a foreign descendant of bacteria.
Yeah.
That we call mitochondria, but it's
actually just chilling in the little bacteria, like chilling in there, making energy for ourselves. Yeah.
Beautiful. There's this brand that we recommend to telehealth patients that I know you all will love as well. OnCharge is so good. It's this holistic wellness brand with a huge range of evidence-based products to optimize your life in every way. Founded on science and inspired by nature, all OnCharge products adopt ancestral ways of living in our modern day world. Their extensive range of premium wellness products help you to sleep better, perform better, have more energy, recover faster, balance hormones, and reduce inflammation. The list is endless. From blue light glasses to red light therapy, EMF management, circadian friendly lighting, Bond Charge products help you naturally address the issues of our modern day way of life effortlessly and with maximum impact. One of our top recommended Bond Charge products has to be the infrared sauna blanket. Sauna blanket works by raising your heart rate to that of physical exercise. So it burns calories while you relax. You can burn up to 600 calories in just one session, guys. The infrared sauna blanket from Bond Charge is easy to set up. It heats up rapidly. You can enjoy a 30 to 40 minute session in your infrared sauna blanket while relaxing, reading, watching TV, or meditating. It's portable. You can roll it up and put it under your bed or couch. The sauna blanket is going to be a game changer for you. Bond Charge ships worldwide in rapid time. There is free shipping on every sauna blanket, guys. There's no hidden costs as well. Easy returns and exchanges with Bond Charge with a 30-day trial and 12 months warranty. Go to bondcharge.com/WillCole and use coupon code WillCole to save 15%. That's bondcharge.com/WillCole. Use coupon code WillCole to save 15%. So you all know, right, by listening to today's episode, that I love Zbiotics. For our telehealth patients who choose to drink alcohol, this is a great way for them to feel great after a night of drinking responsibly when they choose to do so. Their probiotic was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, as you may have thought, that's to blame for your rough next day. The pre-alcohol probiotic produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. This is a proactive solution that wards off feeling miserable the next day instead of a reactive approach like drinking electrolytes or eating greasy foods, all those cliches after drinking. This pre-alcohol probiotic from Zbiotics is something that I'm not just having on the podcast. Learn about the exciting science. It's something that we recommend to telehealth patients as well. Enhance your mornings with Zbiotics. Go to zbiotics.com/WillCole to get 15% off your first order when you use code WillCole at checkout. Zbiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/WillCole. Use code WillCole at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, Zbiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times. All right. So talk about drinking alcohol. I'm a pragmatist. You know, I'm very open on the podcast that I personally don't drink alcohol. I'm not against it morally. I'm not a, you know, teetotaler, puritanical zealot, but I just don't drink. My family and friends do. I run a telehealth clinic. Lots of telehealth patients. The topic comes up. What do I do with drinking? Like, well, I feel like crap the next day. And we're working on gut health and microbiome health, mm-hmm. their metabolic health or their brain health. And I came upon your company and your brilliant work. And I find it such a wonderful tool to help people. But let's start with just when people drink, feel lousy the next day, what's going on?
Yeah. Well, so first I'll say, like, you know, with regards to like drinking or not drinking, look, we know that alcohol is not good for you, right? And so the decision to not drink is always a good one. You know, and I find in my personal life, and I think many people do as well, that like it's not always sustainable to be all or nothing. And like, I think for some folks that works well, and that's really good and definitely like ideal, right? But then, you know, for others, it's like, look, striking a balance and recognizing that there are benefits emotionally or psychologically or socially that I get from occasionally consuming a responsible amount of alcohol that are worth sort of like the health detriment, where we make these kind of trade-offs all the time in our lives. And so I think that that's also acceptable as long as you're going into that responsibly and consciously and aware of kind of the decision you're making and making sure that you're doing that in a way that sort of maximizes benefit and minimizes damage. And so fundamentally, Zbiotics was built around the idea that, like, you know, if we're making that responsible decision, that there are tools that we can employ to do that, to maximize the benefit and minimize kind of the negatives or the disruptions to kind of our healthy life and routines. So to your question about kind of what happens when you drink, essentially when you drink alcohol, it goes into your, you know, goes in your mouth and then down into your gut. And most of the alcohol, the vast majority of the alcohol is absorbed very quickly into the bloodstream, directly through even just the moment it hits your mouth in the lining of your mouth, in your stomach. And then as it gets into your intestines, it, you know, most of that gets absorbed. Most of the rest of that gets absorbed. And so that alcohol then circulates throughout the body. it has the effects that it has. And you know, usually the desired effect of the alcohol related to like intoxication or like social dropping of our sort of like our barriers for like social interaction, things like that. It also has like the negative health effects that we know about it around, you know, ethanol disrupts, you know, hormonal balances in the body. It affects the way your body processes blood sugar. It affects your hunger and satiation hormones. So like, you know, if you've been drinking and all of a sudden you kind of get this late night craving for junk food or whatever, that's actually, you know, the ethanol changing the way the normal balance of our hunger and satiation hormones. Even though you don't need the calories, it tricks your body into kind of thinking you do. And so it has a lot of those effects. And then it makes its way to the liver and it's processed very efficiently in the liver. So the ethanol the ethanol is converted to acetaldehyde using one enzyme. And then a second enzyme converts the acetaldehyde to acetate. And acetate is a short chain fatty acid. It's innocuous. It's essentially vinegar. And from there, that's a very useful molecule. It can be converted into energy. It can be, you know, a lot of different fates from that point on. But at that point, basically the molecule is being detoxified. The intermediate acetaldehyde, so that middle step, acetaldehyde is highly toxic, much more toxic than ethanol. And sort of this, you know, your liver is like, well, like willing to kind of take that intermediate step to get to acetate because it knows it's going to just get rid of all of that anyway. So what's interesting and kind of one of the things that was the foundation for Z-Biotics was that, as I said at the beginning, most of the alcohol you drink is absorbed into the bloodstream. A small amount of the alcohol is actually broken down directly in your gut before it can be absorbed into the bloodstream, in large part by your microbiome, by the microbes that are living in the gut. And so those microbes make the enzyme, similar to the one your liver uses, to convert the alcohol to acetaldehyde because the ethanol, the alcohol is toxic to the microbe. And so they convert the alcohol to acetaldehyde, but they're not as efficient at converting the acetaldehyde to acetate. So what happens is that you actually get, even though it's a small amount of alcohol being broken down, not really relevant in terms of intoxication, that small amount of alcohol is almost exclusively converted to acetaldehyde. So the gut ends up being the major source of acetaldehyde in the body. The acetaldehyde starts to accumulate in the gut, and then it basically is, you know, absorbed out of the gut into the bloodstream. That acetaldehyde is highly reactive, highly toxic, circulates throughout the body, kind of wreaks havoc throughout the body, causes a lot of cell damage and systemic inflammation, all these things that are really unpleasant. It also can get into your brain, combined receptors in the brain that create nausea, things like that. And then eventually that acetaldehyde makes its way to the liver and it's broken down very efficiently in the liver. But at that point, it's too late. Mm-hmm. So when you wake up the next day and you feel not so great, you're in part dealing with some of the effects of the ethanol itself. Like I say, some of those hormonal imbalances. Also, ethanol definitely affects the quality of your sleep. So it binds receptors in the brain that mess up sort of your excitation and depression signals in the brain. And so those things you're dealing with. And so you might feel groggy. You might kind of have some issues dealing with kind of like blood sugar, things like that. But then you have the systemic kind of chaos that this bull in the china shop that acetaldehyde created. And it creates that like sort of like sticky death feeling, the hot like inflammatory feeling and just kind of like that, you not wanting to get out of bed, kind of that misery. And all that kind of comes from the acetaldehyde. And all that acetaldehyde was initially formed in the gut. So, you know, fundamentally, and I'd like to point out one thing that you're not dealing with, which is a kind of a common misconception, is you're not dealing with dehydration. Ethanol is a reasonable like thought experiment or hypothesis, right? That like, okay, well, we know that ethanol binds to the antidiuretic hormone. And we know that like, we notice that when we drink, we happen to pee a lot. But it turns out in studies dating all the way back to the 1940s and many, many, many times since, science has continually debunked this myth. Ethanol does bind to the antidiuretic hormone. You do end up peeing one extra time, but actually it's just when your blood alcohol initially rises. And then once you have the alcohol in your system, the reason you keep peeing is because you're drinking a lot of fluid, right? So when they matched people to drinking the same amount of water as they were drinking, say, a beer, those people end up peeing just as much. So you don't actually really pee more and there's no chemical markers of dehydration the next day. So, the hormones that are related to dehydration, there's no electrolyte imbalances or anything like that. And so kind of like all this is sort of predicated on the idea that we wanted something to point to, but I think we all knew that it wasn't dehydration, right? Because other things that cause dehydration, like hanging out in the sun or eating salty food or working out, none of those feel anything like the way you feel the next day after drinking, right? And vice versa, the thing that cures dehydration, which is drinking water, does not help you at all the next day if you're not feeling well. So I think we all kind of knew deep down that it wasn't, and there's a lot of science to support that. And so, you know, there are many things that are happening in there, but in large part, it's the response to the ethanol itself and the response to the acetaldehyde.
Thank you for myth busting that. I really do appreciate it. And did you use the phrase sticky death feeling?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a brilliant way of putting it.
In my own life, that's kind of how, like, you know, when I've had a day where I'm just like, man, I, I need to take the day off, or I need to take the morning off at least. That's probably the best way for me to explain what it feels like.
Yeah, that might be the title of this episode, how to avoid the sticky death feeling. This episode is brought to you by IQBar. Many people ask me, what's something that's grab and go, either a snack, drink, they want convenient and other healthy things that taste delicious, but also loves them back. The one I've recommended the most over the years are IQ bars. These are a great plant protein bars that are quick, diet friendly, no matter how you eat. And they have these amazing brain boosting ingredients to support your blood sugar and energy throughout the day. And they taste so freaking good. But they also have the IQ mix, which is an amazing electrolyte mix, and IQ Joe, which is an instant coffee with functional mushrooms. Start each day right with IQ bars, brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three. Get 7 IQ bar flavors, 4 IQ mix flavors, and 4 IQ Joe flavors. And today our listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text ABW to 64,000. All IQ bar products are gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, and contain no GMOs or artificial sweeteners. The IQ mix are a zero sugar drink mix that hydrates with electrolytes, improves your mood with magnesium, and boosts clarity with lion's mane adaptogen. And the IQ Joe is a jitter-free instant coffee packed with 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, brain-boosting magnesium, and productivity-enhancing lion's mane. Refuel smarter with IQ Bar's ultimate sampler pack. You can get 7 IQ bars, 4 IQ mix sticks, and 4 IQ Joe sticks. And now our special podcast listeners get 20% off on all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text ABW to 64,000. Get your discount, text ABW to 64,000. That's ABW to 64,000. Don't just drink whatever, drink better. With Hum, you can enjoy a low sugar kombucha, a zero sugar kombucha, and the first Whole30 approved kombucha or a probiotic seltzer and probiotic soda. These things are so good. Hum beverages are packed with 2 billion live probiotics to support a healthy immune system and optimal gut health. Plus, it's loaded with vitamin B12 to give a great boost of energy. Hum beverages are absurdly tasty, guys. They're flavor forward, they're easy to drink, and come in a variety of delicious flavors. I've been drinking them for a long time. I've been a super fan of Hum. I'm just so excited and honored that they're sponsoring the podcast because they're honestly something that I drink in my own life. And we recommend to telehealth patients. It's just great ingredients and they taste amazing. And it's a great way to support your gut health and your immune system. I recommend trying their variety pack. You can try these amazing flavors like dragon fruit. The blueberry mint is so refreshing. And the raspberry lemonade is one of my favorites as well. They also have other flavors like blood orange, which is so good. Peach tea, I love that one. Honestly, you can try them all in their variety pack and tag me on social media and let me know which Hum kombucha is your favorite. If you're looking for a delicious like alcohol alternative too, Hum's got you covered with a variety of zero to low sugar kombuchas and tasty probiotic seltzers and sodas to choose from. Visit humkombucha.com. Use code Dr. Will Cole for 15% off your total order. Find Hum on Amazon for free shipping with Amazon Prime and delivery to anywhere in the United States. So you mentioned how the microbiome, the gut, your gut health is implicated in this process. How can we leverage the influence that our microbiome has on mitigating feeling like sticky death the next morning?
Totally. Yeah. It's a great question. I think there's a lot of things you can do, right? So first and foremost, we know that like all this is based on volume and rate of alcohol consumption. So the slower you drink or the slower your body's exposed to the alcohol. So another way to slow it down is to make sure you never drink on an empty stomach because the food basically slows the passage of the ethanol to the gut. So and slows absorption into the bloodstream. So when you slow it down, then you form less acetaldehyde per unit time, which means that like you have your body has more time to deal with that acetaldehyde as it forms. So kind of you think about like dishes in a kitchen, right? If you do a whole dinner service all at once, then all the dishes will pile up. You have this huge pileup of dishes, right? Or in this case, like acetaldehyde. Or if you're serving people one at a time, then you can kind of wash the dishes as they come in and you never get this big pileup. And so the pileup of acetaldehyde is the problem. And so the slower you drink, the less you drink, and not drinking on an empty stomach. And also, I mean, keeping hydrated is important. just not to combat dehydration, right? Like by drinking water, you're pacing yourself in, you know, if you're alternating drinks per se, and it's increasing blood volume, which dilutes the amount of acetaldehyde by that nature, supporting kind of flow of fluid through the key organs like the liver and the kidneys that are dealing with these toxins you're dealing with. So it's not to say that hydration isn't a valuable thing to do. It's just, you're not dealing with dehydration in this scenario. So those are kind of like the tried and true things. And I think that then the other thing that's really important, it's a behavioral thing, not so much related to the microbiome, but just related to how you feel better the next day, is sleep. Sleep is like, people way underestimate the value or the impact of poor sleep on the way they feel the next day. And so if you go to bed and you still have alcohol in your system, it's going to be disrupting the sleep-wake cycles in your brain all night long. And so when you wake up in the morning, even if you were in bed for 8 hours, you probably only got a couple hours of quality sleep. So when you wake up, it's the equivalent of only having gotten 2 to 3 hours of sleep. And I know that these days, I could do that in college, no problem. But these days, if I don't get at least 6 or 7 hours, I'm going to feel not great the next day. And so, you know, so one of the pieces of advice I give to people, in addition to kind of these other things, is to try to front load your drinks and take have your last drink several hours before you go to bed. And hopefully, ideally, when your head hits the pillow when you go to bed, your blood alcohol is at or near zero, so that like you can get good quality sleep.
Great tips. So are there any specific probiotic strains that are beneficial in degrading these toxic compounds?
So the enzyme that breaks down acetaldehyde, it's called acetaldehyde dehydrogenase, is a really common enzyme. It's present in like 70% of all life on the planet, including, you know, your liver cells and so your human cells and many of the bacteria that are in your gut. The problem is that they're not necessarily reliably expressing that protein at any given time. The microbes in your gut, say, and the microbes in the world, in the environment that could be beneficial to you. And so they're not necessarily motivated to have that gene turned on. They, you know, it's turned on due to various signals internally in the cell that may or may not represent kind of what you're dealing with. So, you know, when we invented Zbiotics, the idea was that we would build a strain that we knew would express a lot of this enzyme all the time, agnostic to the conditions of your gut. So that if you were to take our probiotic before you drink, that we know we'd be delivering a lot of that enzyme to the gut when you needed it. And so that was fundamentally the idea behind it. And so, you know, leveraging my background, my PhD specifically was in bacterial gene regulation. So when bacteria turn on and off different genes based on different cues or signals. And so we leveraged that expertise to build this strain where the enzyme that is a very common enzyme, we ensured that its expression was robust and constitutive. So it was on all the time so that when you ate it, we know you get a lot of that enzyme. And then if there was no acetaldehyde in your gut, then the enzyme wouldn't do anything. And you just pass out the other side and whatever, no harm done, no big deal. But if there is acetaldehyde around it, it was prepared to kind of deal with that acetaldehyde.
Got it. So this is a specific probiotic that produces this enzyme in higher amounts continuously.
Yeah.
What's the protocol breakdown? Like, break it down for us. Break down what the breakdown looks like. How much prior to drinking does someone need to take this probiotic? Right. How much? Let's start there.
Yeah. So we built the product so that, you know, it'd be really, the simplicity of use was really important, right? We didn't want it to be a complex protocol for somebody because typically when you're drinking, you're thinking about other things, right? Like you're engaging in social interaction or whatever, you're enjoying your meal, whatever that might be. So you don't want to have to be sitting there thinking about what, you know, so we designed it so that if you basically, we put our bacterial strain into like a 1/2 ounce liquid shot, essentially. And so you drink that before you start drinking and then the bacteria get into your gut and they're alive. And so they're continually expressing this protein or this enzyme as they pass through your gut. And so it's an enzyme factory. So unlike if we were to just give you like, so for instance, if you take like lactate, right? That's an enzyme that breaks down lactose. That pill is just the enzyme purified. And so you eat it, it has some functionality, but then those enzymes start to get to break down in the gut because they're proteins and your body's really good at breaking down proteins and that's what it wants to do. And so rather than deliver the enzyme, we deliver the enzyme factory. And so then as it makes enzyme, it can break down that acetaldehyde and as those enzymes lose functionality, the bacteria just make more of them. And so the good news is that basically you'll have that functionality for the entire time the bacteria is in your gut. And this bacteria that we use, B. subtilis, it's a common microbe. You likely eat it every day of your life. It's on the surface of fresh fruits and vegetables, and it's naturally evolved to pass through your stomach acid unharmed via, like, it forms a spore, which basically is a highly resilient form of bacteria that can last indefinitely and deal with huge swings in temperature and pH, whatever. And so it's in this dormant spore form, it passes through your stomach acid. And then once it gets into your intestine, it senses that there's a conducive environment and it naturally wakes up out of the spore form. So we didn't have to engineer any of that. We just, you know, benefit from nature on that. And then once it's in there, we've engineered it so that once it's woken up, it just starts making this enzyme. And so then it slowly floats down the river of your gut. And it's basically in your gut for about 18 to 24 hours before it's passed out the other side. And so during that entire time period, it's making this enzyme. And so that's the time period in which you're covered. So basically, essentially, if you drink our probiotic before you start drinking, then that bacteria is there for the next 18 to 24 hours. So as you may drink during that period of time, it should be able to deal with as much acetaldehyde as you would reasonably form, regardless of how much alcohol you drink, because basically the upper limit on the amount of acetaldehyde we can break down is far higher than the amount you'd be exposed to after a night, even after a night of like heavy drinking. So the idea is you just take one before you start drinking and you're covered and you don't have to think about it again.
Got it. You made it easy for everybody. So you mentioned spore form. The spore form, it's there, like you mentioned, it's part of nature, right? And you can leverage the benefits of nature there. But part of the benefits of it being in spore form, correct me if I'm wrong, is the survivability, right? It can make it through the stomach acid and not die, because many probiotics that are on the market are dead on arrival because they're not in this spore-based form. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And so then if you were to use a non-spore former, you basically companies work around this by like making enteric coatings and things like that. And then they require like refrigeration because they don't want the bacteria to grow because they're in an active form. So the refrigeration is meant. So a lot of people think of refrigeration as keeping something fresh. What's interesting is that the reason that you keep it, it keeps your vegetables fresh is because it suppresses the growth of the bacteria that would rot, that would otherwise rot the food. And so when you put a probiotic in the refrigerator, you're not keeping it fresh. You're suppressing its ability to grow. And so the reason that, so our bacteria, because it's in a spore form, it's already in a dormant state. It won't grow until you give it nutrients that wakes it up. And so as long as we don't put any nutrients in there, it's shelf stable at room temperature. It's still alive. It's in this very robust spore form. It can persist like that almost indefinitely. They've literally pulled bacterial spores out of like ice flows and crystals and in caves and things like that. And they're 100,000 years old and they're still alive, which is just amazing. So,
that is so cool.
it's a pretty incredible bacteria, Bacillus subtilis. I could nerd out on that forever, but I won't.
People will appreciate that. And now again, forgive my elementary analogy, but I think of the spore form as like those toys as kids. I don't know why I'm thinking of like the 90s today, but like when you put the little capsules in the water, it like opens up into this toy.
Yeah, like the little pill of the foam dinosaur that comes out.
The foam dinosaur, that's what it was. Totally. A dinosaur, a T-Rex, that's what it was. Brachiosaurus.
That's a great analogy. It's exactly right. Yeah, right. Like it's in that little capsule, and then once it hits the gut, it wakes up and
I love it. Let's face it, life can be stressful. It can be overwhelming. It's not just your mind that suffers when you're feeling tense and anxious. Stress can also make a mess of your gut health and your immune system as well. But here's the thing. Your life doesn't have to be a constant downpour. Introducing Just Calm, which is a breakthrough new stress-soothing formula from a company that I've loved for years, Just Thrive. Say goodbye to frazzled nerves and hello to a steady, serene, calm, more relaxed you. Just Calm's proprietary mood-lifting blend is clinically proven to help you relax and breathe a little easier in as little as 4 weeks. And for next-level mood TLC, I love the Just Thrive probiotic. The spore-based probiotic banishes bloat and constipation so your gut can produce more serotonin, your happy neurotransmitter, which 95% of that's made in the gut, stored in the gut. It works on GI motility and the vagus nerve, which is your resting, digesting, calming aspect of your autonomic nervous system. So you're supporting the second brain in many ways with these two products. It supports better sleep so you can wake up feeling refreshed and revitalized by regulating your nervous system through this formula. With Just Calm and the Just Thrive probiotic, you'll have the ultimate stress-fighting duo to help you win the day every day. Right now, when you go to justthrivehealth.com, use promo code Dr. Will, that's D-R-W-I-L-L. You can get 20% off a 90-day bottle of Just Thrive probiotic and Just Calm. That's like getting a month completely for free. To learn about this groundbreaking company, I've had Tina Anderson, who's the founder of Just Thrive, on the podcast a few times. Every single time she's on the show, I learn something new about gut health, microbiome health, and brain health. So go back and listen to those episodes with Tina Anderson. Take control today with Just Thrive.
This is Amanda Hirsch from the Not Skinny But Not Fat podcast. You might know me from Not Skinny But Not Fat on Instagram, where I spend my time talking about reality TV, celebrities, everything happening, and pop culture every Tuesday, okay? I also talk to some of our favorite celebs and reality TV stars. We talk about what's going on. Tune in every Tuesday and just feel like you're talking with your best friends in your living room.
All right, so you mentioned the word engineered probiotic, which I'd love to get into this, like what that's like. And I get why you did it. You did it for a function to increase the enzyme production so we can get the benefits from it. But let's start there. How does that come to be? How do you engineer a probiotic? And then we'll get into some more controversial stuff.
Yeah, totally. Well, so like, I'll sort of like not bury the lead here. You know, every bottle and box of Zbiotics is labeled proudly GMO. So we do use genetic engineering and we're proud of that. And I can dive into why we think that's a really valuable and important thing to be doing. But in general, we'll start with kind of the how, and then we'll dive into the why maybe a little bit more. So fundamentally, we start with a safe edible bacteria you eat out every day of your life already. It's commonly used in fermentation products like kombucha and chocolate and the sort of a Japanese fermented soybean food called natto. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, this is something that humans have been intentionally ingesting, even like you ingest it every day, whether you mean to or not. And then in high numbers in these fermented foods for centuries. And so we know it's safe. We know it's naturally evolved. It lives in the soil. It's naturally evolved to pass through your gut in the way we've already described. And so it's this great bacteria that's like very well characterized and very safe. And so we didn't have to hunt through nature to find something that was unknown. This was very well known. And then, so then we decided we would use this as a chassis to deliver a useful function, which is the breakdown of acetaldehyde. And as I said, this function already happens in your body. It's just not happening at the right place at the right time in the right amount. And so we just wanted to ensure that you are getting enough of this enzyme in the gut, specifically when you are drinking alcohol. So really combining two things that your body already knows to be safe. And so how do we do that? How do we ensure that? So there's a couple different ways that people would traditionally go about this. So there's one in which you sort of scour nature and try and find a bacteria that already produces a lot of this enzyme in the conditions of the gut. And that may be hard to do. And so you sort of do these high throughput screens. You maybe identify a new strain or new species of bacteria. And then you're sort of starting from scratch. And so that's sort of like quote unquote natural, right? That function already exists. Mm-hmm. But like you're starting from scratch in terms of its safety at that point, right? Like you don't know, like it wasn't something that was necessarily like in everybody's gut. And so we don't know what impacts it's going to have on the microbiome, given that everybody's microbiome is different. We don't know like kind of all those things. So we have to start from the very beginning there. And is it producing like, you know, things we don't want? And so that's the risk of, right, doing this high throughput screenings. And so instead we say like, well, we'll do something very guided and controlled. And so we insert a single enzyme into a known location in the genome. And the way we do that, and I think that this is another thing that there's a lot of fear and anxiety around genetic engineering, because I think it sounds like this very like, you know, we're playing God or like this mm-hmm. very complex technology. The dirty secret here is that it's not. It's leveraging basically the existing process by which bacteria, in our case, by which bacteria already edit their own genomes every day, thousands of times a day or billion, mm-hmm. uncountable times a day. Essentially, so bacteria have evolved over the last 3 billion years to basically, when they're swimming around in their pond, if there's like little floating chunks of DNA from other dead bacteria, the bacteria can naturally take up those pieces of DNA, and then they start to compare those pieces of DNA to their own genome. If the piece of floating DNA looks relatively similar to their own genome, they will on their own, they have all the machinery to do this, they will naturally swap it in to their genome for the piece of DNA that looks similar to it. So they're basically like, hey, I'll try this out. And maybe mm-hmm. it won't do anything. Maybe it'll kill me, but maybe it'll make me stronger. And so that's kind of the bacterial strategy for survival, right? Like it's a numbers game. And so every once in a while, they pick up a piece of DNA that gives them an advantage. And so like that's how bacteria evolve. And so it's a natural process that bacteria do to like kind of change their own DNA. And so that the ability to take up the DNA is called natural competence. And then the ability to kind of swap in that DNA when it's similar is called homologous recombination. So like the homology triggers like a recombining event. And so these are just natural processes the bacteria already do. And so in the last 20 to 40 years, you know, humans have developed enough analytical tools to understand this process, to understand the natural process the bacteria already do to change their own DNA. So it's the same, it's analogous to plant crossbreeding, right? Like plant mm-hmm. crossbreeding, we take pollen from one plant and smear it on the flower of another. And so we're basically like moving DNA from one plant to another. We're mashing them together. And then we allow the plant to naturally kind of recombine its own DNA, right? And then we select mm-hmm. for the plant that has the traits that we want. And so this is really just a bacterial version of the same. So we essentially take a piece of DNA from another bacteria that has the trait that we want, and we put it in a test tube with our bacteria. Our bacteria naturally take up that DNA, so natural competence, and then they match it. And then so basically we can guide that matching by making sure that DNA has homology to Bacillus subtilis. And so then Bacillus subtilis matches it exactly to the place in the so we design the DNA so that we know exactly where in the genome it's going to insert because of that homology. And so then it crosses over perfectly down to the single base pair. So we can ensure that we're not making, so with plant crossbreeding, we just put the DNA together and say, hey, I don't know what's going to happen, but at the end of the day, we're just going to look for, redder tomatoes or whatever. And so here we can be a lot more precise. And we can say we don't want to disrupt anything else. We don't want to create any other problems. We don't want to just make this single edit. And so then that's what we do. And so basically literally just mix the DNA together with the bacteria. The bacteria do all the work doing the natural processes they've evolved over the last 3 billion years. And then on the other side, we ensure that it can break down acetaldehyde. We sequence the whole genome and we make sure that that's the only change that happened, nothing else happened. And so at the end of the day, we have something that is completely characterized and totally understood down to every single DNA base pair. And so using a natural process that's extremely guided, extremely precise, bacteria are way better at genetically engineering themselves than plants are. And so then fundamentally, that's what we did. So we ensure that we have a bacteria that we know is safe, that's extremely well characterized. And now we know that in addition, it can perform this one extra function by expressing this one extra protein at a very precise place in the genome.
Wow, beautifully said. I've never had someone describe it in that way. But I think you're doing something really novel and innovative that hasn't really been done in this space at all, which is why you're on the podcast right now. You're guiding a natural process for a specific outcome to benefit us.
Right.
And I think that the topic of GMO, it can become so reductive and broad sweeping statements, I think, without looking at something that I know your brand, which is another reason why I'm having you on, is because of transparency. So people can know what they're getting and empower consumers to know what's up. And not all, just because something's labeled one thing, there's lots of quote unquote natural things that aren't great. I think I talked to a lot of physicians and researchers and scientists on the podcast, and I hear everybody say that no matter what space. And I see in my space in functional medicine, there's lots of natural things that are very disruptive to our health. Totally. And we can use science and using natural processes to make things safe and effective for us. So can you talk about that, about GMO? Because I feel like GMO can be sometimes so synonymous with just basically Monsanto and glyphosate, herbicide.
Right.
But it's so much more than that. Can you kind of dispel the myths there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's really important, first and foremost, to get it right in front of that. Exactly, you said that. Like, our products are proudly GMO. That doesn't mean that we think that all GMOs are good. And I'm not here to throw anybody under the bus or anything, but I think that I'm trying to kind of disentangle the conversation and elevate to something a little bit more rational, right? Like, so there is reasonable concern around the GMOs that are on the market today, right? Like, and I think an honest and genuine debate can be had over the safety or irresponsibility of that genetic engineering. But what's important is that the product that was made with the genetic engineering is the potential problem. The technology used to make it is not. That's just a technology, right? And so like the analogy I often use is that there's a reasonable debate around guns, right? There are people who are anti-gun and there are people who are pro-gun, but nobody's arguing about metallurgy, the technology used to make the gun, right? Because we recognize that metallurgy can also make a spoon, which is a very safe product. So we can argue about, right, like you say, glyphosate, Roundup Ready Corn, whether or not that's good or bad, dangerous, risky, whatever. But the genetic engineering that was used to make it is not inherently what made it unsafe. It was that application of the technology.
Yeah, it's how it's used.
Yeah, right. And so unfortunately, now they've been conflated. And so there's a lot of people who are anti-GMO in every respect and not recognizing that like that it's the application of the technology that can be upsetting. And so when we think about genetic engineering, and the mission on Zbiotics is to elevate this conversation above good or bad or is it or isn't it into something more reasonable and nuanced and rational. Any new technology is going to pose risk. And we're not saying that it doesn't, right? Like a combustion engine is an incredibly risky technology that we apply every day of our lives and everything we do, from the cars we drive to whatever. And so recognizing that risk and then applying it in ways where we're willing to accept that risk because we've mitigated sufficiently with responsible use of the technology, I think is what's the most important thing. And so with Zbiotics, we often talk about like GMO 2.0, which is like characterized by being responsible, transparent, and people first. And so one of the things I think, right, is like if you walk into a grocery store and you see non-GMO corn or GMO corn, right? You know, this kind of debate around glyphosate and Roundup Ready corn. And so you're like, well, I'll take the non-GMO corn because GMO corn, it doesn't provide any benefit to me. The benefit was to the farmer and it might have these kind of challenging things. So I get that, right? But then like, if we're to say, okay, well, we apply the technology responsibly and we're transparent about it and say that this product is a GMO, like, you know, we're letting you know you can choose it. And we're saying that like the technology was used to create a benefit for you, the end user, right? The bacteria couldn't do this function before and now they can, and that function is beneficial to you. That like, that's people first, right? And then being transparent about it, making sure that people know they're making the decision. I think one of the things that freaked people out early on was that it was hidden, that people didn't know they were eating GMOs and they were like, well, why are you hiding it? Is it bad? And so obviously that sounds sketchy. And so the idea that we can let people know that like, hey, we're going to be super transparent about it. We want you to know everything up front about how we do it and why we do it and let you choose one way or the other. And then, as I say, like being responsible. So applying the technology in a way that is safe, right? So as I described, we took a gene from another soil microbe. So we're not, so you're not taking a gene from like, you know, a bacteria at the bottom of the Mariana Trench or from like a totally different like kingdom of life or something, right? Like we're doing things like this reaction has already happened in nature, right? Like, like Bacillus subtilis has definitely taken up an acetylated dehydrogenase before. And so we know that like, we're being very, you know, very careful and cautious about what we're applying. We're using natural processes the bacteria already use to create the, and all of that is described on our website. We go into detail about how we build it. And so we want to give people all the information and show that we're being very thoughtful about how we apply it. And we're making sure that we're not breaking evolutionary boundaries and we're not like kind of creating unknowns and being unnecessarily risky. And so we think if we characterize all those things, then people can say, okay, I'm not cool with Roundup Ready corn, but like, I am excited about this product and I'd like to try that one, you know? And then for us, that's good. And not because people are buying our product, but because like that too, I suppose. But like the main thing here is that like, that now we're being more rational and nuanced, right? That like, what is the application of technology? Do I align with that? Do I feel comfortable with that? And and that's how we should be thinking about technology in all cases, right? Is that that everything is, there's shades of gray in everything, or there's applications that are good or bad in everything. And so ideally, I think what I've seen is that a lot of companies have chosen to not apply the technology when they otherwise could because they're afraid consumers will reject it. And so that's really hindering humanity, right? Like biotechnology and genetic engineering is a tool in our toolbox that we can use to combat climate change, feeding a growing population of people, dealing with emerging infectious diseases. Like all these things are, this is tools that we can apply that are aligned with humanity's best interests. And understanding the technology can be applied to things that are against our best interests, but it also can be applied for them. And so if companies are afraid to use it for good, then we're all losing out on that. And so I think that that's kind of our mission is to kind of hopefully elevate the conversation to a place where we can start using this for good.
I love that. Using it for good, disentangling, bringing context, nuance to this topic that is complex. And it's been so reductive for so long, mainly because it's been one major player that's doing all the things. And
right. Yeah. And they weren't necessarily good. And so I think that's been a problem and we have, you know, and I empathize deeply with people's concern, right? Because as you say, kind of like the whole story and the whole show was kind of one thing for a while. But like, we're hoping to kind of help the conversation move forward a bit.
Yeah. Well, it's so well said. I mean, what's the application of use and not throwing all the science into one thing? Because it was never that. But now you're showing a great use, I think. So obviously part of your mission is to elevate and educate and empower and give people agency over, you know, being empowered consumers. But I mean, what's that been like? Because I'm assuming, especially touching into the wellness space, there's a lot of conversations to be had.
Absolutely. And it has been like, I mean, I've been so grateful to have the opportunity to have that conversation. So I think that, you know, before I started Zbiotics, I had these opinions, but you know, the best I could do was blast them out on Facebook and hope somebody read them. And obviously nobody would. And so it's been great to be able to have the opportunity to have those conversations. And we've been having them and constantly evolving our thinking on them since we started. And so hundreds of customer conversations and interviews and focus groups and really learning where people are coming from, where their fear is and why, and understanding it, also informing how we can be more responsible stewards of the technology as well. And so I think that's been really important. You know, to be clear, I mean, I didn't start this company because I was really passionate about making people feel better the day after drinking. It just so happened to be a really great application of the technology that people were excited about and willing to kind of hear me out on, basically. And so that ended up being, okay, great. Like, here's like meeting people where they are and recognizing like, what are people interested in? What do they want to, what piques their interest enough to kind of hear me out and learn more? And so really it's kind of a gateway into that conversation. I mean, not to mention that it is a huge unsolved problem. I thought we could have a real impact on human health, right? So people used to have to, or felt like they had to choose between having a night out with their friends or enjoying a bottle of wine with their significant other or something like that. And then, you know, maybe missing their next morning workout or that morning hike, or they were late to the ski slopes on day two of their ski weekend or whatever. And the idea that we could build a product that allowed you to maintain your healthy habits and routines, even as you sort of responsibly socialized, was felt like a great kind of application use case. And like I say, and it also opened up this conversation. We've been able to have that, right? You know, we sold like over 3 million bottles now. So that's, you know, 3 million times that somebody has knowingly and transparently chosen a GMO. And that to me is a really exciting kind of step forward in that conversation. So it's been good. I mean, it's not been without its challenges, but in general, I found that it honestly, you know, the vast majority of time being transparent and explaining the benefit and explaining how we did it is more than enough to alleviate fear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And not that in a way you're doing something that's so transparent anyways, right, of how you're doing it, but there's so much education. I get it. But what's your view of the GMO industry as a whole when it comes to consumer goods and food, when a lot of people within the natural world, natural health food, organic space are advocating for labeling just like you're doing, but there's pushback, I guess, from a marketing standpoint, because people are going to pick the non-GMO stuff when it comes to corn, which is a great example.
Right. Yeah. I think that, like, ultimately, I think this is the thing I really want to accomplish. Like, it's the long-term vision or goal, right? Is that we have the same ultimate end goal and values, I think, as people who initially started the non-GMO movement. The idea of like transparency, sustainability, these are important things. And I think that the organic movement, in my opinion, I think that there are really valuable things about organic farming, but it is not fundamentally a sustainable strategy, right? Like that's like 17th century agrarian technology, right? That we're applying to feed a population of, I think, like 8 billion, growing to 10 billion in the next 20 years, people. Agriculture is the single least natural thing that humanity has done to this planet, right? Like mowing down forests to plant crops in a row. And when people talk about biodiversity and like how organic farming increases biodiversity, it doesn't. It only increases like the few select crops that we plant, right? And we're mowing down all of these fields where there is true biodiversity and you get less yield per acre, right? Like it's a less... that's why it's more expensive, right? It's less efficient. And so, and that's not to say that it's all bad, but like the point is that like, the goal is sustainability. And I think that's important, right? And we recognize that like using pesticides and nitrogen fertilizers are definitely bad for the environment. And so like, so the organic movement says, okay, let's stop doing that. But then the downside of that is that then we get less yield per acre. We have to mow down more forests. So that's also fundamentally at the end of the day, not sustainable. And so what we need is to take best practices from all, right? And achieve true sustainability. So if we can engineer a crop using genetic engineering in a responsible way, right, that like makes it more drought resistant or allows it to produce more nutrients. So like, for instance, like golden rice, right, it's rice that produced like vitamin A that allowed for diets that were deficient in parts of the world that were deficient in vitamin A that eat a lot of rice, that they now get this sort of supplementation naturally, right? So these are all ways that we can make agriculture more efficient and more sustainable. And I think that ultimately that's the direction we need to go, right? We need to acknowledge the risks of genetic engineering and make sure that when we do engineer, we're being responsible about it, but lean into the tools that we can use to be more sustainable, right? Like to plant like more yield per acre or sort of like less agriculture generally, right? Like making sure that more diversity of plants and that are not for human agriculture. And I think that fundamentally, that's the way we succeed and sustainably live as humans in this global ecosystem. So I would like to align with the people who are non-GMO on like what our ultimate goals are and how we can apply every tool in our tool belt to make sure we get there.
Thoughtful response. And I hear what you're saying. I think the best practices normally is a both and approach, not an either or.
Right.
And I think on a local level, I'm obviously a massive advocate for regenerative farming and buying local when needed. But I hear what you're saying when you're talking about world hunger, food demands, growing population, and that too, like how can we have transparency and choice and regulation when needed on industries that haven't had our best interest in all ways, like we've been talking about earlier. And you look at certain governments, I think internationally, and the regulations they've done, that's just not here. I mean, things yes. that then can go unfettered here would never pass in certain other, international settings.
At the end of the day, it's like, trying to make sure that we're being safe and responsible, right? And like, I think that regulations in both directions have been wrong. Like, I think that like those that have been more restrictive are overly sort of like simplifying. And I think the ones that have been overly permissive have also been sort of like allowing things that we know are not great. So, you mentioned, for instance, I think it's a great example, right? You talk about regenerative farming and local, right? Like that, absolutely, right? The less far you have to ship a product, the less like a burden it is on the ecosystem, right? And, with the greenhouse gas emissions, things like that. So imagine using genetic engineering to turn like your, a factory, or building in the middle of a city into like a vertical farm that can feed the people in the surrounding blocks, right? And like we can make engineering bacteria or plants that can fix nitrogen into the soil. So we have to use less nitrogen fertilizer. There are companies actively doing that. And so like, those are things where we can make crops more regenerative, more stable, more sustainable, and be able to grow them in lots of local climates, right? Like right now, you can only grow avocados in certain parts of the world, right? But what if we were able to do that anywhere? Then we wouldn't have to start shipping them, from Mexico right. every year, right? So I think that like there's or tropical areas of the world or whatever. So I think that there are ways that we can unite those principles. Like I say, like you said, sorry, it's a both and approach. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I'm sure you hear, you mentioned over 3 million bottles sold and counting, so much more after this conversation. What's something that sticks out in your mind of like, wow, like I did that, or I was a part of that, of the difference that somebody noticed when they drank without Z-Biotics versus drinking with it?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's, big visions and big things we want to accomplish. And that was why I started the company in the first place, was to have conversations like this and get this message out there and try and elevate the global conversation. And I hope to get there one day. But in the meantime, it's been really fun on a smaller level, on an individual level. Like for the first 2 years that we were on the market, so we launched in August of 2019. And so for the first 2 years, I handled all of our customer service myself. We're a small, lean team. And it never got old kind of hearing people write in and be like, I was really skeptical, but wow, like I'm amazed, and I'm telling everybody, or like, can I have a discount code so I can share it with all my friends or whatever, like that, like people, I think like it never got old hearing somebody say like, hey, I just went on a ski trip with my friends and I can't believe how good we felt, or like how much more we were able to get out of that trip, and it really felt amazing. Like as a scientist who spent all day, staring at a lab bench and, test tubes and stuff, to like put that science into somebody's hands and have like a real impact on their life. That felt amazing. And it still does. We still get people who reach out and say that. And it just is like, it's amazing to feel that way, to feel like you actually built something. The reason I wanted to apply this technology in the consumer space as opposed to in the drug space is I wanted people, when you make a drug, somebody has to take it because they're sick, right? Or else their options are limited, right? But when you make something that is not live or die, then people can choose to take it. And I thought, and one of the things I was so excited about when I started this company was the idea that like people would, I could put science in people's hands and they could choose that science. And then that science could have like a positive impact on them. And so it's been really like so rewarding to see that, even on just like the micro level, when just individuals write in to our customer service and stuff.
That's great. As you know, the podcast, it's called The Art of Being Well. At the end of every episode, we have Your Art of Being Well. First question is, what is the worst tasting healthy food? It could be anything. It could be natto. It could be natto. If you have that, because that tastes pretty unique too. But for you, what is that food that you don't do it because of taste, but you do it because of some nutrition science, health science behind it?
Right. Just tough it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for a long time, my answer to that would have been kale. I just like, it tasted like kind of dirt and like, and I just didn't like it. But the more I sort of integrated it and found ways to prepare it. Things like I've started to actually genuinely enjoy it. Like the texture used to put me off too. It was like sharp as it went down your throat and stuff. But I've started to, I say to the one though, like beets. Beets to me are just, they're gross, man. They taste like dirt. I do not like them. Yeah. So I think those are some of the ones.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Beets for sure. I'm not a beet fan at all. That's like, I'll have it if I have to.
Right.
Or like beet juice. I mean, I tolerate it, but it's definitely not my first choice.
Not for me.
Next question. What is your dream vacation, your dream holiday?
I love the woods. So like my dream holiday is like a week or two in a cabin in the woods, lots of hiking. If there's a mountain lake or something, that's great too. Do some fishing and just kind of enjoy just being out in the trees in the dirt. I really like that a lot. But
what
I said in the dirt, but I have also somebody who really appreciates the shower. So I like glamping. Like I want a cabin with a shower and a bathroom and stuff like that.
I love it. One of the best places I've been, and of course it's not my secret little thing I found. It's called the Smoky Mountains. I don't know if you've heard it or not.
Maybe you've heard of it, yeah.
It's up and coming as far as its accessibility
and
awareness. But no, it's beautiful. In like the quiet, they call it the quiet side of the Smoky Mountains in Townsend, Tennessee, East Tennessee. It was beautiful. I stayed in a tiny house and it was one of the best glamping. It was above glamping. It was a tiny house.
Yeah.
But have you been there before? Because it's otherworldly.
Yeah. So actually my dad's family is from the Smoky Mountains. Yeah. And my grandpa was educated in a log cabin schoolhouse like in the Smoky Mountains. Yeah. Been back a couple of times to kind of like see the old kind of like landmarks and stuff like that. It is incredible. It's insanely beautiful. It's really fun. Yeah.
That's wonderful. All right. Next question is, what's a book you've read? It could be fiction book, nonfiction. We have an Art of Being Well book club, basically. People have a running list from the guests. But what that you've read in the past year, let's say, that just was like, wow, a big aha moment for you or a great read?
Yeah, I think that the first one that comes to mind is, I'll probably kick myself later. I wish I thought of this more. But the first one that comes to mind, one that I just noticed I end up referencing a lot, is Atomic Habits. I read the book and nothing in there is like earth shattering, but like just like the way it's all organized and I think about it now when I want to create a habit, I want to be more productive in my workday. I want to like integrate some new thing, like a workout or practicing or whatever it might be. And I find that I leverage those techniques a lot and it's really, really helpful. And I think about it as well with Zbiotics and like, how do we kind of communicate with our customers in a way that like, you know, we're asking you to integrate something new into your routine. Like, how do we do that? So I think it's really cool insight into kind of like, how people behave and think about habit stacking and things like that. And so, yeah,
love it.
I really like it a lot.
Great. James Clear, I think, right? James Clear, is that his name? Habits? I think it is. Here.
James Clear, yeah.
James Clear, cool. I've not read it, shamefully. My son, my teenage son has read it, but I have not. But I'll put it on my list. All right, my friend, tell people where to go to learn about the amazing things. I have a special code for them too, but you can tell them where to go.
Yeah. So zbiotics.com is the best place. So we put in blog content. We try not to have that all be infomercials. We really try to have a lot of valuable information around genetic engineering, the gut microbiome, what's happening to your body when you drink, tips not related to our product that can help you kind of, you know, recover better and get more out of your next day, things like that. So yeah.
Great. So zbiotics.com, everybody. Zbiotics.com. And I have a URL, zbiotics.com/Will Cole. So go to zbiotics.com/Will Cole and use code Will Cole, because if you do that, you get 15% off and try it for yourself. And then let me know. Tag me on Instagram, tag me on social media. Let me know your Zbiotic success story. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Zach.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is a blast.
Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.